and you have joined Kill Radio for Teacher Talk. Do it, teachers.
All right. Good morning, everyone. If you're listening, to killradio.org. And again, this is Teacher Talk. I'm Mark Hempel, and this is
David Garcia.
And we're standing in for Nick Rickard, the regular host, for the next couple of weeks, and he's on a well-deserved vacation. If you were listening last week, you probably noticed that it was a pretty hot session. We had David speaking. In fact, he initiated a number of issues which he wanted to cover. However, Lenny Eisenberg, the editor of PerDaily.com, called in and sort of steered us in a different direction, but a good direction, prompting more discussion. And later toward the end of the show, John Adams phoned in, sort of an outline representative of Jaime Oliver's Food Revolution. But we didn't have much time for him. He may call in again today. In fact, I think that even Lenny might call in again today. But as I was saying, David will finish up what he started. However, if I can indulge David for a moment, I'd like to report a recent event. With your permission, David.
No, of course. We're like a 1-2 team, right? So let's do it.
Yesterday I was at the Black History Museum in Exposition Park with my associate, Lenny Eisenberg, again, the editor of PerDaily.com. We were there for the Conversation Series, which is a program that the Black History Museum runs in which they bring in local dignitaries within the community, some of them fairly well known. It just so happened that yesterday the dignitary was the recently retired superintendent of the Los Angeles Unified School District, Ramon Cortinas. Oh. A small audience, less than 40 people there, very friendly to him. It was sort of a trip down memory lane with Ramon Cortinas. When we arrived, he had already arrived before us. He was working his way through the audience, shaking hands and smiling like I've never seen him smile before. And in fact, in the two tenures that he served as superintendent, I never remember seeing the man smile even once. That wasn't so yesterday. He was warmly greeting those whom he recognized. The interview that they gave him was a very friendly one, very innocuous. He more or less went over his career, revealing some aspects of it that none of us would ever know. In fact, probably this week I'll write up a piece for PerDaily.com which reviews this whole event. But what I wanted to bring to your attention was this. There were a number of things he said that were stunning if you were a teacher, not so if you were a member of that community. One of the things he said during the Q&A session was that he was in favor of unions, that he supported unions. The reason he gave for supporting unions, or the main reason anyway, was that it takes the union to be the watchdog over a superintendent who is punitive toward teachers. Now, that probably goes off the scale of 1 to 10 for hypocrisy. The man has followed a policy of dogging veteran teachers, trying to get them out of the system because they are the highest paid. He's gone after regular classroom teachers for any reason through evaluations or accusations which place them in the tank momentarily while they were being investigated. For him to stand there and say that it was a slap in the face to all of us. Yeah. Lenny Eisenberg didn't want to sit down for this, so he was the first one up for the Q&A session following this question that was asked by the moderator. Now, Lenny asked him to relate the test scores in L.A. to the scandals and cheating on the tests or else fixing the scores in New York and Atlanta. Cortinas immediately changed his demeanor. The smile was gone, and he became very defensive. Lenny persisted in trying to draw out some sort of a reaction to him on the similar accusations which are now prevalent in Los Angeles. In doing so, Lenny also related that as a teacher, he's been removed from the classroom, and in fact, removed from the district, and he's fighting to regain his job. Now, at this point, and we didn't get very far along in this, we were surrounded by several gentlemen who meant no harm, but their sole purpose was to wrest the microphone from Lenny's hands, which they did successfully. However, following the presentation, a number of people did come by and they wanted to know more. So we weren't the only ones aware of this. But this is the sort of thing that I want you to be aware of, that these people who have formerly served in high places within the district, and I dare say the union too, are not ever going to own up to anything that they did that might be a dubious distinction. And with that, I'll leave this topic alone. If you want to know more about it, look into perdaily.com, wait for the article. I'm sure you'll be able to spot it. And I need to turn the time over to David because he has a lot to say.
Well, thank you, Mark. You know, I met Lenny Eisenberg, and I'm glad to officially now meet Mark Campbell. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to having them. I consider them colleagues in the fight to reform public education. However, there are some things that I kind of disagree in their approach. And their approach is, you know, see, I wouldn't waste my time fighting Ramon Cortinez or the current superintendent of the Los Angeles Unified School District. And the reason why I wouldn't do that is because I think that they're like intermediate middlemen, if you will. I think that the problem is a lot bigger than just the local governance of our public education system here in Los Angeles. I think that it's a top-down mismanagement. You know, during the administration of Ronald Reagan, I had this theory of trickle-down economics. Well, under the past few administrations, I believe that they've invented something called trickle-up larceny, or larceny, where we steal people. We're pilfering from the working class to support the pyramid with the billionaires up on top. And if you'll give me a few minutes to build an argument to prove that to you, I'd be more than happy to do that. But before we do that, I'd like to kind of give you guys a background as to why I'm saying this. I'm not a bitter, disgruntled teacher. I'm not a former employer. I'm a teacher that works in the inner city. I'm a teacher that cares about our students. And I'm also a teacher that sees the disparity. I mean, you have a union and a district with saying that they care about our students and their education, but then you turn around and have a district that has nearly half of all its students dropping out. I mean, something's wrong there. And I dare say that what's wrong is not only like grossly negligent, I think it's incompetence and verging on criminal. It could be considered criminal that we are compromising the education that we're giving to these children. Okay, we're taking their future away. And everyone seems to just sit idling by, and nobody really wants to stand up and say, well, enough. Well, where did all this come from? Where did this get generated from? And if Mark would give me a few minutes, I would just like to say that it started with the Marshall Plan. It started with the Marshall Plan. Before I say that, I just want to mention, I'm neither a Democrat or Republican. I just consider myself an American. So I think we, as an American, we need to hold our government accountable. And we're not doing that. You know, there's that saying about Rome is burning. Well, I believe that the United States is on a downtrend, and we're not doing anything about it. So, in a way, this is our Sputnik moment, if you will. It's our moment to say, hey, look, we need to mobilize. Oh, and Mark, feel free to jump in anytime. We need to mobilize. We need to get all these other people that are out there that are seeing what's blatantly wrong with our public school systems and advocate for change and hold our representatives accountable. Now, after saying that, I love disclaimer, I'd like to mention that the Marshall Plan was a time of prosperity in the United States. We were the number one manufacturer of everything. We were the number one exporter. I mean, but little by little, as the Marshall Plan started winding down, jobs started to disappear. You know, the textile industry started to die, furniture, automotive. If you don't believe me, I think Robert Reich is a really good book you might want to check out. Robert Reich, Super Capitalism, is it?
I believe you're right. Yeah. I believe you're right.
Yeah. And so, well, what happens is somewhere along the way, we went from being an industrial number one exporter and producer in the world, switching over to a consumer economy. We're based on consumerism. So now that we're based on consumerism, we don't need to have people that are highly trained or highly qualified, right? So all these jobs have left. They've left the United States. They've gone abroad. And what have they done? Well, why did I say it was trickle-up larceny? Well, all these jobs that have been taken away from the United States, the owners of these corporations have made a lot of money. If I was an owner of XYZ company, and I decide, hey, I'm going to move XYZ company to Central America or China, what have you, I don't have to worry about workers' rights. I don't have to worry about fair wages. I could be paying, instead of paying, you know, 200 employees $15 an hour, I could hire, I could build a sweatshop and pay people 10 cents an hour or, you know, 100 bucks a month. Then I could bring my product back, my XYZ product, and still sell it for the same amount that I was selling it beforehand. Well, now I've made a double amount of money, and I think that's illegal. I think that that's what's happening now with public education. What you're getting is you're getting people saying that, hey, we're going to streamline education. We're going to simplify it to give people a bit of subpar education, and our investment in public education will double. Let me give you another example of that. You go to McDonald's. You go to any business. Any seasoned business person will tell you, you never want to customize or individualize a product to meet the needs of every customer. You want this assembly line cookie cutter product. And the reason is because you want to bring your profit margin up. If I went to a hamburger place and I said, okay, I would like a hamburger, but I want it on sourdough bread, they would probably look at me like I was talking a foreign language. If I said I wanted a wheat bread, they would say, we don't have that here. You want the hamburger or not? They only know how to make it one way. The problem with applying that model to public education is that people do not learn the same way. There are no two, and I believe Mark will agree with me, there are no two same types of learners. Some people have different modalities. Some people listen. Other people are tactile. Other people are kinetic. Some people are visual, auditory, what have you. So the problem is in the fundamental problem of trying to streamline education and simplify it for one size fits all. That's not going to work. Now, as some of you may know, last week I had mentioned that I had ran unsuccessfully for a representative of the United Teachers of Los Angeles, Teachers Union president. I didn't win. But I learned a lot. And what I learned under that experience is, you know, A.J. Duffy, I mean, his legacy or infamy, if you will, it's gone. And now we're under Warren Fletcher. Now, the verdict is not out on Warren Fletcher, in my opinion, because I don't know if he's done anything yet to advocate for public education. But it seems to me that it's an assembly line leadership. Just like I said, they're trying to implement a model of assembly line education.
David, did you notice that if you've been watching the web, that criticism has been slowly increasing of Warren Fletcher?
No, yeah. So see, it's an assembly line leadership. You remove A.J. Duffy, Warren Fletcher. It doesn't matter who you have in place. I mean, the system is set up. The system is set up as it is that regardless of whoever is at the leadership, it's benign, incompetent. Mismanagement of our union.
It's sort of like watching, what's that old program, The West Wing? You conclude that the president really doesn't have that much power. It's the people around him.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is that I believe that us being the second largest union or second largest school district in the country, we have 40,000 plus members. I mean, these are not panhandlers. We have 40,000 plus college-educated people. And so you would think that they would come up with some kind of comprehensive plan to reform education and hold Los Angeles Unified School District accountable. You know, it's funny that you had mentioned Ramon Cortina says unions are good to hold superintendents accountable. I believe that that's true. I agree in that sense. I just wonder where he was talking about because that doesn't happen in Los Angeles Unified.
And that's exactly the point.
Yeah. So I think, you know, idealistically speaking, he's correct. But I think he's off tasking that. That doesn't happen here, and it doesn't happen here. And I'm gonna give you guys another example. I tend to want to bring in analogies, but you know, I've met Mark. I think he's a sweetheart. Okay, let's say I'd say, hey Mark, let's go to the grocery store. You mind driving my car? And he says, sure. Okay, I go, hey, just stop right here. I'm gonna get a withdrawal from the bank. Well, I go out to the bank and I pull out, you know, a handgun, and I decide to rob the bank. And I come back and I go, okay, Mark, let's go. And the police pull us over and they arrest us. Now, Mark, I don't know about you, but I think that the police are going to tell you need to get a lawyer. I think they're going to tell you that you were either an accomplice or accessory to the crime, what have you. That's the same thing that we're trying to say about United Teachers of Los Angeles. If this mismanagement continues, if we still have 48% students dropping out of Los Angeles Unified School District, how is it that our union is not stepping up the advocacy for our children? Now, it's just like that analogy I told you where Mark is in a car with me. I mean, he can turn around and say, hey, I didn't know. He said to stop at a bank. I did. I mean, the police officer investigating him is going to say, hey, you need to get a lawyer, right? It's the same thing going on here. I believe that United Teachers of Los Angeles is either grossly negligent or an accomplice to what's going on. There's no way in my mind that we can allow the reduction of force of, what is it, 3,000 teachers? It's more than that, actually.
It's more than that. Yeah, if things go well, which they keep on coming up with these formulas that if money is found, that it'll change. But money is never found. In fact, you know yourself, the governor just took over the budget. Yeah. LA Unified is no longer in control of its own budget.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe, I don't know, I can't confirm these numbers, but I was thinking the RIF notices were somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000. I don't know. Some people have told me as far as 10,000. I'm not sure. I can't confirm that. But, you know, that's true. The budget is being taken over. Now, one of the things I proposed to A.J. Duffy, and he didn't even bother responding, was why don't we together as a union ask for some type of moratorium on reduction in force? Because the people that had gotten RIF notices, the average salary that they had is, what, $56,000 annual salary. And by dismissing these people at $56,000 annual salary, I mean, it just seems to me a very dishonest practice. But let me tell you why I think it's a dishonest practice. I have a list here, and this list was generated from the LA Daily News. I think it's about 4 years old. And this list is mentioning the salaries of people. And one thing that you notice is some of these schools have 7 to 8 assistant principals. That doesn't include a school dean. The average assistant principal is making about $103,000 annual salary. That's $1 million right there at each school site. Now, I can't really confirm that, but it seems to me a little bit, again, like I said, duplicitous in nature when we're talking about we want to make cutbacks. And then we turn around and get rid of teachers that have under 4 years. When you have, if I may I read this list? Yeah. You have general counsel. Where was general counsel? $175,000. Should I mention the names?
No liability. And mentioning those names puts you in under duress. You're fine.
Ahead. Yeah. Trouble for me?
No. No. You're stating a statement of fact.
Yeah. Yeah, so, okay, well, see, General Counsel Mark Fall is paying $175,000 annual salary. Business Manager Michael Eugene, $185,000. Richard Deeb, $185,000. Kathleen Collins, $185,000. Andrew Chung, $185,000. Now, all of these people are people hired under General Counsel. These are principal assistant principals. Director of Systems Information, Susan O'Brien, $128,000. Director of Litigation Research, Emilio O'Connell, $130,000. Waheed Balogian, I'm sorry if I ruined the last name.
It's Balogian.
Balogian, okay. Regional Project Manager, $129,000. Let's see, who else we got here? Anthony Amendrades, $124,000. Director of Telecommunications, Pamela Anderson, $129,000. Craig Alessi, $123,000. Gene Akashi, $128,000. So the list goes on, and it just occurred to me, rather than saying, hey, we are going to get rid of teachers and hand out all these reductions of force, isn't there a way to negotiate saying, look, there's a lot of these people that are getting paid a disproportionate amount of money, and they're not even in the classroom anymore.
And David, may I ask you, who would do that negotiating?
Well, if we had a real representation, I believe the leadership would.
And there's a reason why I'm asking you that. You're aware of the parity in the situation or the scenario that you've just painted also coexists in the union.
Yeah.
There are field representatives in the union who pull down up to $140,000 a year.
Yeah, that's true.
So the same thing is happening
absolutely
to us.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's our money.
Yeah.
That we're paying them.
Yes, yeah. And again, I'm not bad-mouthing the union. I'm a member of the union. I pay my monthly dues. But I believe, like I said, we have to be integral. And if the district has 48% a dropout rate, and it does, is that number exaggerated or dishonest?
Not at all.
No, okay.
In fact, look at the dropout rate with teachers. Even Cortina's yesterday reported it at 50%.
Okay, so that number is not conjured, is not made up. That's a fact, and that's the reality. Boots on the ground will tell you, which I am because I'm an inner-city school teacher. So I'm saying that, look, all this other fiscal mismanagement that we're having, that we're blatantly turning our eye, you know, against, it needs to stop. And we need to stand up together and say, enough. We need to hold ourselves accountable. Never mind pointing a finger and saying that the superintendent this or that. The Los Angeles Teachers Union needs to say, there's enough. We've had it. We need to really work on people's test scores. Now, one of the things that really, really upsets me as a teacher working every day in the inner city, as you have the federal government saying, you know, there's race to the top, no child left behind, whatever mantra that's coming from the federal government, and it's like top down, they want to tell us how to manage a classroom. Well, you know, we don't tell them how to manage a government. So I don't understand where they get this inclination that they think they're going to know what's best for our students. You know, and I think one thing that I've famously or infamously mentioned before is, you know, you get superintendents saying, well, I observe a lot of classrooms every day, and so therefore I am an expert. And as a matter of fact, I spoke with Ramon Cortinas one time, and he told me that personally. He said, well, I observe classrooms every day. And what I told him is, I can go to the L.A. Zoo, and I can look at lions, I can look at primates, I can look at giraffes. That doesn't make me a biologist. It doesn't make me a veterinarian. It doesn't make me any more of an expert than another person that just happened to observe animals in captivity. So if a person says, well, as Ramon Cortinas or as a lot of these other people say, well, I've been observing a classroom is not going to tell you how to improve students academically. And the reason why I mention that is because the federal government has this misconception that they know what's best for our students, and they're going to step in and intervene. And yet, you know, under the Bush, Barack Obama, Dawa, nothing has happened. We continue. I mean, in fact, the dropout rate in Los Angeles Unified School District has been pretty consistent. That's the one failure that we've had. That's the one consistent point that we've had. We've had about 48, 47, 50% dropout rate, and it doesn't really fluctuate. It's pretty much, that's the constant. And so we need to start saying enough. Let's hold ourselves accountable. Let's implement something that will work. Let's implement something that will work. Now, again, I don't mean to rattle off all these people's names, but it just seems to me that it seems to me cost-effective, ineffective, when you have so many people representing general counsel with the astronomical salaries that they have. Gregory McNair, $180,000, you know, and all these assistant principals. Why can't we get representation in our union to say, look, we'll advocate for those people to take a slight reduction in pay so that we don't have to lose any teachers? Because
– and, David, consider the number of people that you are not aware of in the system who are on these similar salary levels. For instance, the consultants. These are former administrators who return at their former salaries.
Absolutely.
And virtually are not accountable for anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is that these – you're right. You're right. There are a lot of people that come in as consultants and they get paid, you know, the money. I think that A.J. Duffy, he is not – I mean, look, the proof is in the pudding. If the former president of United Teachers of Los Angeles really cared about teachers, really cared about teaching and students, then he would go back to being in a classroom and being a teacher, because that's the profession that we're in. That is not true. I think he's waiting to get a consultant job. I think he's waiting for Eli Broad, or he's waiting for
Bill Gates
or you know, the Partnership for Los Angeles, Mayor Villaraigosa's.
Yeah, well, the story is that there are several six-figure salaries he's already been offered.
Yeah, so see, his concern then is extending his career outside of the classroom. It's not for the students inside a classroom. And that, to me, is more of a bureaucrat. It's more of a politician. He's not a teacher in that sense, that he's like, hey, look, I've got to be boots on the ground. I've got to be in the front lines working with students, which, by the way, that's what I believe teachers are. I believe teachers, you can't win a war dictating to the infantry, okay, how are you going to run the war from your armchair in a plush office. And that is another problem that is both Los Angeles Unified School District and the teachers union, like I said, they're both helping one another in doing that.
So you're saying that the Beaudry more or less operates like the Pentagon.
Yeah. This trickle-up larceny that I was talking about, because see what it is that they're trying to pontificate to the rest of us how we're supposed to run a classroom, you know, when they have no sense of how to run a classroom they themselves. Because if you ask people, you know, like I asked Ramon Cortinez, when's the last time you've been in a classroom? He said, well, I've been teaching for over 35 years. And I said, okay, well, when's the last time you've actually sat and taught a class? He goes, well, I observe classes all the time. And I go, well, when's the last time you actually sat and taught a class? He said, I think it was like 20 years ago. Well, 20 years ago, there was no such thing as text messaging. There's no such thing as Bluetooth. There's no such thing as Blackberries. There's no such thing as iPods or what have you. I mean, I think 20 years ago, you had a Walkman that was the size of an almanac. So those were pretty easy to spot. But, you know, the dynamic of a classroom has evolved and changed since that time. And if you are not constantly in the classroom, then I don't think you're a credible professional opinion to assess the classroom.
And in relation to what you're saying, yesterday Cortinez claimed that in his former positions, because, you know, he's been a superintendent for many districts.
That's right.
And he's also been, a regular school principal.
That's right.
He asserted that at that time he would sometimes walk in and take over a classroom momentarily or for part of the day if he felt that teacher was having difficulties and then return it to him when things were stabilized.
Yeah, taking over a class for 10, 15 minutes. That's not the same thing as taking over a class for 3 months. So I don't know. Like I said, that to me just doesn't sound legitimate. You know, most of my experience working with students was in a group home. I used to work as residential treatment. And when you had a student come in, or they called them clients, and they had to stay overnight, it was a closed lockdown facility, there was always this honeymoon period, they would call it. The honeymoon period was when the student would come. He wouldn't be acting out. He wouldn't be doing anything, you know, like, there was no abnormal confrontational behavior. You know, he was still kind of, you know, assessing his surroundings, if you will, and that was the honeymoon period. For somebody to say that they're going to assess a classroom for 10, 15 minutes or take over a classroom for 10, 15 minutes, that's that little honeymoon period. You're not getting a true assessment of how that classroom is, of the dynamic of the environment, or of the students. And so, I think that's a bit dishonest. In my opinion, anyways. So I've come up with a list of certain things that we can do to try to help. And I think that one of the most important things we could do is we need to start writing letters. We need to start making phone calls. We need to start, the public needs to start to step up and say, enough. Now, the problem is that when you write a letter or when you make a phone call, it pretty much just gets thrown by the wayside. But if I may suggest to our listeners, if you ever want to get a response from the superintendent or the president of the teachers union, if you're going to email him, attach it to a local news. Attach it to La Opinion. Attach it to the LA Times. Attach it to the San Francisco Chronicle. Attach it to the New York Times or the Washington Post. You start attaching your letters that you send to these people in higher places to the media. I mean, even though the media itself is compromised, it will start pushing these people to a more integral position on where they stand, in my opinion. And that's where it comes in with what John Adams was saying about, you know, the Jamie Oliver food revolution. Jamie Oliver was trying to be an advocate for healthier eating will promote healthier living. And, LAUSD didn't want that. They didn't want him in there because they were going to look bad. So then you have, I think, John Deasley, the current superintendent of LAUSD, trying to make amends with Jamie Oliver on Jimmy Kimmel. Well,
that was more, that was not a legitimate, hey, I'm concerned about the kids. That was more of a PR strategy, a public relations strategy, where the superintendent saved face because he was going to work with Jamie Oliver. But it, the concern for our children wasn't legitimate. And those are those corporate strategies that, that people are bringing in, that top-down larceny thing, that streamlining education. Okay, if he was a real advocate for our students, you know, the superintendent would actually care about our students and be willing to implement strategies and reforms in their behalf. You know, not appeasing the, you know, subsidized milk industry or what have you, and, you know, allowing this, you know, sugared milk or unhealthy food to come in. But I'll tell you what, that has more to do, like I said, with the school district, having contracts with Cisco, having contracts with ADM and all these other producers, than really caring about our student body. Mark, if there's anything you want to add or if there's any calls, please, I'd like, I'd really, really like to have some callers come in and call us. What's the phone number here?
No, it's 213-898.
No, wait a minute, gentlemen. It's 213-252-0998.
Okay, can you repeat that again?
Okay, 213-252-0998. And we certainly would welcome some callers. What I'd like to add, though, to what David said is, as far as this this top-down theory goes, I don't think that either I or Lenny Eisenberg would have any problems with that. The only issue we have is this, is that individuals like Ramon Cortinas get to walk away with the retirement package they do and the benefits and smile back after all the misdeeds they've done. It's sort of like on a lower level saying that if it's the end of World War II and one of those Nazi officers escaped to Argentina, hey, he's in Argentina. He's done. Yeah. You know, we're done with him. And that was sort of the attitude that we got when we were at the presentation yesterday at the Black History Museum. It's the man is no longer in power. Why should we stress him with, you know, any responsibilities or accountability? Well, look what he did for the past 50 years. I mean, it's still a serious issue. In terms of that one-size-fits-all, David, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the district cuts these deals with these package programs. There's a lot of under-the-table dirty dealing there, and you know how the district works. Every 5 to 10 years, they decide they're going to rotate their programs. It makes no difference how much in the way of materials, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars are stacked up in their warehouses, book bins, and in the book rooms of schools. Some of those books, in fact, a large number of them, have never even been opened. Mm-hmm. If that particular program is phased out, new one comes in. The district has to do this to justify its spending. If they didn't do this, their budget would be reduced.
That's right.
And you know how this goes. Like you say, it's top down, but it's not just top down here. It's top down from the feds. It's top down to the state. It's top down to the county, and then from there to the city. So there's a long top down pathway that it follows.
Sure.
And one other thing, your comments about Warren Fletcher. Well, as you said yourself, the man is surrounded by A.J. Duffy retainers.
Yes.
So how much differently can he act? Serious questions.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, Mark. It's just that, you know, I've met him, I spoke with him briefly, and he seemed, you know, I mean, like I said, I can't make an assessment, but you're right. I mean, the man... the analogy that we had said that if we're both in a car and rob a bank, then we're both going to be in suspect. So you're right. If he's hanging around with Betty Forrester and Griggs Skolkovitz and all these other people that are trying to make a career out of being bureaucrats and staying out of a classroom, well, then his legitimacy comes into question. Absolutely. I totally agree with you on that case, Mark. The thing is that what we need to see at this point is, I think, you know, there's a grace period that I would like to see him clean up our United Teachers of Los Angeles. And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he can do that. I've spoke with him on several occasions. Maybe he can call in and we can talk to him. I'm not sure if he's even listening. But, you know, I've spoken to him, and he said that he likes some of the ideas that I wanted to implement. And I'm like I said, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, but that brings up a good point, Mark. You know, see, one of the things that I've also spoken and why specifically I wanted to be a representative of the teachers union, because there's a lot of power in that. And there's a power that not to be abused or neglected or to be, you know, in accomplice to the district. You know, the thing is that if the current UTLA teacher president would stand up and say, hey, you know what, Mr. Superintendent, you need to publicly condemn the wars in Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, right? And I think in they were bombing Syria?
We're not bombing Yemen.
Yeah, yep. Yemen. Okay, so if you openly condemn these, you know, take out a paper and a page of the LA Times, condemn the wars in Libya, Yemen, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Did you know that we would have enough money to fully fund every classroom in every school district in the United States, including the American territories? And we'd still have enough money left over to give everybody Social Security and health care coverage, comprehensive health care coverage. That's the disparity. And so what we're thinking is, okay, let's balance the budget of our government by, instead, like I said, the top-down, the trickle-up larceny. Let's balance the budget of our government by taking it out on the working class and removing, if you'll excuse us, we're here in the beautiful city of Angels.
Street side serenade.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that, you know, as I was saying, you have a government, as Mark also pointed out, that is being top down in its management. We're spending a disproportionate amount on funding war, and we're trying to balance the budget by taking out programs that support working class families. So what we're doing is, you know, we're balancing the budget by pretty much destroying the working class. They're obliterating the working class. And, you know, again, just because I've mentioned this before, I think when I ran for the UTLA candidacy, is that, you know, the gross domestic product of the United States for last fiscal year was something about $14 trillion. These are facts. You guys, don't take my word for it. Go ahead and look them up when you get a chance on your own. $14 trillion was spent on military defense. $14 trillion was the whole gross domestic product. 56% of that $14 trillion was military defense, while only one-fifth or one-sixth was education and Social Security. And I think I mentioned that when Nick Richard was here last week. So we're going to try to balance the budget. Instead of saying, hey, well, let's trim some of this defense spending, we're going to say, okay, well, we need to start getting rid of teachers, getting rid of social service programs. And I believe Barack Obama even put Social Security on the table as something that he could negotiate with. Am I correct on that?
You're absolutely right. And there are all sorts of senior advocacy groups now that are highly active on that.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like, you know, this is like a nightmare George Orwell, you know, so it's beyond surreal. We're not doing anything about it. You know, we're not doing anything about it. And, I mean, look, we want a nation build. I believe that George Bush had said we weren't going to nation build. And then we got into this whole, you know, trying to develop a wartime economy again, and because, you know, going overseas. What about rebuilding the infrastructure? What about the nation building right here in our home in the United States of America? I mean, we have a drug war south of the border that's been raging. Innocent people are getting killed. And we're kind of like, you know, we're funneling the arms over there. You know, so it's total mismanagement. And you know what? I'm a person, like I said, I consider myself an American. And it's not that I'm trying to be treacherous. It's not that I'm trying to be a treasonist. I believe it's our duty as Americans, and it's my duty as an educator, to stand up and say, enough. We need to start working together to make real solutions a reality. You know, and so the thing is that I don't feel myself, like I said, I'm a traitor. I feel I'm treacherous to the cause. I feel that I'm trying to contribute. I feel that I'm trying to stir the masses to, you know, to have that Sputnik moment, that in a way Mark and I are like, Paul Revere, and we're instead of yelling out the British are coming or the Redcoats are coming, we're like, hey, the corporate model is taking over democracy with, you know, capitalist principles, and you know, where once there stood democratic integrity, there now stands interest in financial gain, you know.
So can we have some callers come in, call in?
And I'd like to add to that, David. As you mentioned, you were one of several candidates that ran for the position of UTLA president. There was only one other candidate besides yourself who suggested paring down the salaries of UTLA officers to be in parity with a classroom teacher. It was you and Linda Everhart of the Save Slate.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
No one else mentioned a word on that. No one else even commented on that.
That's true.
All right. We would like some callers to take the time to let us know what you think about this. Add your own comments. Disagree with us. We'd be happy to hear that, too.
Yeah.
We'll play a little music, and we'll wait for the first caller.
Come, mothers and fathers, throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend a hand. For the times, they are a-changing. The line, it is drawn, and the curse, it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast. And the present now will later be past. And the order is rapidly fading. And the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changing.
Is this Mark?
Yes, you're speaking to him.
Hi, this is Linda Everhart.
Linda, well, if you've been listening, you can add a lot to what we've been discussing. That much I know for certain.
Well, I'm a little bit scared to do this, but I'm more into writing, but I was just thinking about what Garcia was saying, and it was just like was repeating what I had said in an earlier email about how Fletcher has just become an administrator, not a leader.
So far, you know, again, as David says, we're sort of keeping the jury out on that, but it sure looks going in the direction that you're saying. Can you sort of, since you ran for UTLA president.
Please go away right now.
I know who you're talking to, but
the little child.
Right, that's right. Can you sort of relate something to us about what that experience was like? Because yours was a much different experience than what David experienced. I mean, he basically campaigned the best he could, presented where it was possible, made his appearances, made his statements, and was generally speaking left alone. Yours was a far different experience. And your experience was different due to agents that operate in the name of the union. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, that we were kind of cut off as much as they could, huh?
You were cut off. You were harassed. You know, everything possible. You were subject to accusations.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of effect did that have on your campaign?
Okay, well, I was never on the peak group, but LA Subs, which was manipulated by Leonard Siegel, who made a farce of the citywide elections by manipulating the candidate statements, right?
Well, what you're saying is absolutely right. And for those listeners who are not familiar with LA Subs, it's sort of, if you want to stretch the definition, the voice of substitute teachers online. It operates like a forum, in which I think the original purpose of it was to discuss issues in education which related more to curriculum, implementation, improving instruction, things along those lines. But that's before our careers, and definitely the careers of subs, became more politicized, and consequently the union became a major factor in the lives of subs. What is the irony of this is the union doesn't really pay much attention to subs at all. It's certainly not going to defend them in the case of a confrontation with school administrators, or it's going to do that reluctantly. And in general, the amount of aid that it has to lend to protecting the jobs of subs, that's also, as you know, this summer, as an example, pretty much evaporated. With summer here, work is down for subs, and there's no guarantee that it's going to actually go up that much in September if the rifts persist.
Yeah, well, in the first place, I was a reluctant candidate, but I figured I was asked to run, and I figured I'd better run, because if not me, who else is going to, for the subs, actually make a statement about how the union has been manipulated by the district and how we were thrown under the bus. Am I supposed to be talking?
No. Actually, you said exactly some of the things I was hoping you would say. What I'd like to ask David is this. David, what's your perspective on this, given that if you're a RIF teacher, you're very...
Very what? Oh, you're back on now?
Yeah, David would be very likely...
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
If David is riffed.
Yeah. Which I am. I mentioned that on Nick's show.
He wasn't rescinded yet, was he?
No, I was not. I'm in a waiting list limbo, if you will.
So he's looking at the prospect of becoming a priority sub.
Yeah. Well, which I actually didn't file for a substitute teacher, and the reason I didn't was I thought it was unethical. I think that a RIF teacher will, if, and Mark, you can correct me if I'm mistaken, but a RIF teacher will then become a priority-based sub, and then I will bump a long-term sub out of the way because I will have priority over that person. Is that not true?
You've said it the way it is.
Okay.
Well, basically what the union has done is set the contract teachers against the substitutes instead of...
Exactly. Divide
treating,
and conquer.
...treating us both as equally valuable.
Divide and conquer. I mean, that again is part of the legacy of the mismanagement of A.J. Duffy and Julie Washington, and it's something that I'm not going to play with. I'm not going to be an accomplice in their mismanagement or their negligence. So I didn't fill out for a priority sub, and it's something that I won't do. It's a hardship for me. Let me just tomorrow.
Oh, I'm already speaking.
To answer your question, Mark and Linda, I just wanted to give you guys yet another example. Is that, you know, the district spends so much money on, like, her training, harassment training, sexual harassment training, work-related, work environment training, what have you, that you're not supposed to harass people. You know, the district, when the district themselves is guilty of harassing its teachers. I mean, look, I have a family. You know, and for me to get a RIF notice, it's very difficult for me to go through the summer. You know, I'm not knowing when they're going to call me back, or if in fact that they will call me back. You know, I still got to buy groceries. I still got to buy my kids, you know, things. My son, Steven, who's listening right now, he really loves this Harry Potter. He wants to go see this Harry Potter movie. I mean, I got to budget my finances. That's like cruel and unusual punishment. That's like making – that's a hostile work environment situation for me, if you will, you know. And I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for us, the members of United Teachers of Los Angeles that have been, you know, ignored. And even to that extent, the students that have been denied the quality education that they deserve, maybe we should all just get a class action lawsuit going against the district and against UTLA, and maybe then they'll start to listen to us if it goes
into. Well, the Subs already have two class actions against the union, and also one against the district. But
that's
a very hard road to hoe.
Well, you know, it is, but I mean, what other options are there? I'm, you know, again, from my point of view, I am a RIF teacher. You know, my daughter Jana likes, you know, to buy her little toys, Lala Loopsies or what have you. You know, my wife likes to go to, you know, Neiman Marcus or whatever, these Citadel outlets to go and, you know, shop for things on clearance. I mean,
well, the district and the union don't care about our families, and that is for certain.
And you know what? You've nailed it on the button, Linda. They don't care about our families because they don't care about us. They don't care about the families because they don't care about its members. They don't care about its constituency. What they care about is appeasing the district and being an accomplice in the I don't know, for lack of a better word, in the dirty politics of running a district. You know, and I think that Mark had mentioned it earlier. One of the examples was that, you know, we've all seen the mismanagement of funds, you know, the brand new Read 180 books that aren't even, they're still in their wrappers, and then all of a sudden they get tossed out and they're thrown away because now we're going to implement a new model. Well, what about including an open bidding process instead of being contractually obligated to, you know, for book distributions and classroom supplies and such things, you know? What about being forthcoming about the fiscal management of the district? Nobody wants to talk about that, you know? I mean, it's a tragedy. How many listeners? We should have at least 200 listeners right now. I mean, this is such a serious subject, and yet, you know, we're nowhere near that. You know, I think that as long as – look, I'm going to tell you something about human nature.
We need to get more teachers on blogs. We need to get – more of them involved, and to let them know, more of them to know about Kill Radio, because I didn't really know until Mark got involved.
Yeah,
and
Mark told me about it. I'm
very
grateful.
Word out.
Yeah.
Because truth is spoken here, and not a bunch of gobbledygook and covering up for the district or the union.
Right. I agree. And as I was saying earlier, like, I wanted to thank Mark because I got involved because, you know, I'm a guest DJ, guest host because of Mark. The thing that I wanted to say was something about human nature. It's like this. It's just human nature. I'm going to steal from someone so long as I am not caught or held accountable. Right? I'm going to pilfer from whoever I can. It's just like, the, you know, those old sayings that you got to stand up to a bully in order to get that bully to leave you alone. Right? That's a cliche, but it's a cliche that has some merit. People are going to continue to mismanage the district. There's going to be shady dealings between the district and the union, and they're going to continue until we decide to stand up to them and say, no, this is wrong. We need to stand up together and say, you know what, union, either represent us as you're supposed to, as you're contractually obligated, or else I am not going to pay you my monthly dues. Stand up to the union, and the union should be responsible for standing up to the district. And that's what we need to do. Again, like I said, we should have 200 or 300 listeners right now. This is very important. This is the future of public education. And by the way, the future of public education will directly impact the future of our country. So this is the most important thing that we could be advocating for. And, you know, we all seem to be asleep behind the wheel.
You know, David, in relation to that, and I pass this over to you too, Linda, we're all fall victim to becoming the others. And what I mean by that, and I've said this before, and I'm sure everyone's tired of hearing it, is we all notice these things that are wrong and that we need to do something about, but we believe that others, or the others, also see it too. And they're going to notice it, and they're going to do something about it. So we never focus on the fact that to the others, we're the others. And no one does anything.
Yeah.
It becomes a spectator event.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pedestrian activity.
Yeah. Mark, you're absolutely right. And well, which is why I'm here and I'm now getting involved. And I'm just, like I said, I'm a lowly inner city school teacher. I don't have any political aspirations. I'm not trying to become a CTA or NEA or AFT representative by any means. I'm a classroom teacher. I'm verbalizing the injustices I see from my perspective. And when I'm done and when people wake up and when people start to be active in making reform and making change, I'll go back to being in the classroom. You know,
we need more people like David, more teachers like David, who get mad as hell and not going to take it anymore.
Well, I agree with you, but I'll be honest with you. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here and say, knowing David's credentials and his background, and I could give you a number of other reasons too, I would actually rather see him in one of those offices.
Yeah.
And by that, I don't mean a principal. I would rather see him as a ranking official in the union or something along those lines, because I already know he's not going to go along with this stuff, and he's not guessing.
And he's a man that will be a leader, not just an administrator, once they get into office with the union.
I'm grateful of that. I really appreciate those comments. But I mean, you know, the reason I'm upset about this is because, you know, let's look at the facts. I mean, it just came out. I think I forgot if I read it in The Economist, but by 2050, you know, China will be the number one nation in the world. And I'm not sure. I don't recall if it's India or the United States next. The United States are running behind in third or second place. But the reality of it is if we continue to mismanage our leadership, our education in this country, our country will continue in its downward trend. Like I said, China's going to be taking the number one position of production and exports. You know, India will be a close second, and then the United States will be a dismal third place falling behind and a continual fall behind. I'm sorry, but you know what? I can't allow that to happen, and I don't know why. As you said, as Mark said, we're the others. I can't see why more of us are not actively wanting to take a role and to try to circumvent that from happening.
I can kind of answer your question, and I would submit this to both you and Linda. The plan that the district has put into place in teachers has been not just relatively effective, it's very effective. Let's look at both ends of the spectrum. We have our regular classroom teachers, which would include you and Linda, as substitute. Well, on both ends there, if you listen to the chatter on the web, there are already suggestions among the regular classroom teachers that if you're a RIF, maybe those other teachers who weren't RIF would be willing to give up part of their salary so that the RIFs wouldn't be RIF. And in other words, the district once again playing that game where we pay for our own positions.
But they did that last year, and it worked.
That's absolutely right. And now look what they're doing this year. They're shutting out the subs. Now, if you're a regular sub, you know, I've heard language to the effect that, look, we can handle a classroom as well as any of the regular classroom teachers. In fact, we have more varied experience. Why should they be doing our jobs? That's exactly the kind of talk the district wants to sponsor. They want us as divided and separated as they possibly can make us.
Yeah.
And our union leadership has been playing into it.
A house divided will not stand. A house divided will not stand. And Linda, you're absolutely right. The leadership, it's either they're incompetent, grossly incompetent, and negligent, or honestly, they're accessory to the fact, or they're in on it as well. And you can take your pick on which one of those you would like to decide upon. But, yeah, I think absolutely Mark is right. But divide and conquer. I mean, you know, and that's why I think that, you know, when Leonard Eisenberg was here, not here, but when he was a guest caller last week, and John Adams as well, you know, one of the things he was saying is that we need to encourage people to stand up and walk out. And we need to do that, you know, locally. I think he's absolutely right. I think we need to encourage people, but not just teachers or students. I'm talking, we need to encourage. See, the crosshairs are on American working families, and we need to fight back. No more of this, you know, we're supporting a billionaire, you know, we're sponsoring a billionaire because, you know, I'm losing my job with that top-down larceny concept I was telling you about. No. What we need to do is we need to say, look, garbage men need to step out, electricians, plumbers, gardeners, you know, firefighters, police officers, you know, crossing guards, teachers, students, everybody. We need to say, let's decide on a date, and we need
to say... Yes, these are all the people that used to be considered heroes by the general public.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, but as teachers, we're sort of in a unique position in regard to what David is saying. Think about this, Linda. If the students boycott, that's at no cost to teachers. Now, if the teachers boycott, the district has the ability to take money from them and to follow through with other punitive measures.
But if the students boycott, they have to do that before school and not go to school.
Otherwise, the
district schools still get their average daily attendance money.
Right. As long as they don't set foot on that campus, they have the ability to take money from the district. When you take money from the district, they will suddenly become attentive.
But, you know, but see, I'm saying we shouldn't just look at it from the perspective of, see, I mean, there's a lot of injustice going on. You know, like the grocery workers, their contract is I think, going to be under negotiation. And their retirement and their benefits is in jeopardy. And as a matter of fact, they've did the same thing. You know, they're cannibalizing one another. I think that's what you know, in reference to what Mark has said, is that they're saying...
You know, if we get the students to do that, it's also a double sword. Because the district... And the educational system as it stands right now wants those children not to be critical thinkers. They want to make them worker drones so that they're ready to work for the corporations in low-level jobs when they get out of school.
That's exactly what
we're... But if we get them thinking...
We agree. And what we were also suggesting was this, that if we're successful at organizing and orchestrating a boycott, it isn't just a walk around the school or have fun for the day boycott. No, it's up to us as those of us who are retired teachers to organize instruction and present instruction to those kids at various locations.
And I was even thinking, like I said, bigger than that.
And that would be a credible way to teach them social justice.
Include grocery store workers, include bus drivers, include plumbers, include, you know, there's so many people there. There are union members out there. We need to include them too, not limit it to education with teachers. I mean, you know, like I said, working families are under the crosshairs of this, you know, federal government policy. And as Mark had mentioned earlier, it's coming from the federal government on down, and it's targeting us, the working class people. So we need to mobilize together to fight back. We need to say that, you know what, supporting war is only going to, you know, help out the Carlyle Group or Halliburton or all these other people that are out there making money. Because make no mistake, people are out there making money right now from the disastrous times that the United States are in. And there's also people that are hurting. Well, we need to say that, you know what, as government representatives, you're supposed to be representing these American families, these working class families, and not the corporations that are standing to make financial gain. And we need to tell them that by mobilizing. And I'm going a step further than what Mark and Leonard were saying. We need to just tell anyone and everyone that is a working class to stand up, stay home one day. I'm sorry.
I'm listening to you, David, and not only am I in agreement with you, I haven't shared this with you, Linda or anyone else, but in arranging for guest speakers for Teacher Talk, I do have people from those fields. In other words, those who belong to various labor and socialist organizations who have already volunteered their time to talk on KILL Radio and appraise us of all of their connections, the groups that they work with, what they do. And these are people that are out running food banks and things along those lines. They're not people who just dialogue. They're a real activist. They take action.
Yeah, I mean...
I would like to also see you get John Walsh on the radio.
If
he's considered a gadfly by the Metro.
Well, Linda,
and
why don't you make a phone call for us, since you seem to have distinct familiarity with John Walsh, more so than either David or I. You know how to get in contact with David, and I tell John Walsh, or we'll contact John Walsh, and he would be a welcome speaker.
Yeah, he's the one that created the die-in that the substitutes did in front of the Beaudry building and embarrassed Cortinas. And actually, I think that's what got us our seniority back, because they were trying to deal with the choice schools, and they didn't want to deal with us. And so I think that's, they wanted to get us out of the way, so we won. And he created the whole thing, so I think he would be an excellent candidate to speak here. But that depends on whether he wants to.
Well, we're Kill Radio here. We're absolutely community oriented, and as David is pointing out, it's not just teaching issues. We're concerned about community issues, national issues. And all of this, one way or another, feeds into education, should be part of education, and those receiving an education should be made aware of these things, or they're going to come out of school thoroughly ignorant and unable to defend themselves.
Yeah. The only thing I was going to say is that, I'll try my best to look into it, is that, you know, we need to get the Spanish-speaking community in here. We need to get all walks of a community. I did listen to what John Adams was saying, and I think that it was unfair the way Jamie Oliver was treated. And I did try to make contact with some of the Jamie Oliver Food Revolution through Facebook, their organization. But I think that, you know, the NAACP, I think all of these organizations that are out there to advocate for sections in our community. I mean, we all have a vested interest, a common interest in this, and that's, again, it's a bigger picture than just simply saying it's public education.
And I agree with you again. In fact, one of the things I am working on is soliciting the presence of the Food Revolution's field representative.
Oh, okay. Excellent, Mark. That, you know, that's great. I mean, it's what's happening is what we don't realize is by simplifying education, again, as I said, this cookie cutter assembly line education, we're building a dichotomy between a caste system, I guess would be a bit more appropriate way to put it. You know, where the elite and the people with financial resources send their kids to prestigious schools, and the rest of us have to settle for sending our kids to public schools or everywhere else. And, you know, you just kind of have to shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, my son or daughter is going to go to public school, but I'm going to get on their case, and they're going to do real good. You watch and see. You know, whereas these other people that are, you know, have the resources will send their kids to, you know, these other high-performing schools. And that right there is going to tell me that, you know, if you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, your son will likely be a doctor and a lawyer. And if you're an immigrant who just came to this country, you don't speak English, and, you know, your son barely makes it through high school, then your son might at best think of being an air conditioning technician or an auto mechanic. You know, I mean, to me, that's criminal. And education is the key. And by taking away people's education, or, again, dumbing it down or watering it down so much so, that it's almost, yeah, it's, I guess, maybe Mark, you can help me out.
It is
like a dichotomy.
It is a dichotomy, and not only that, but what you're saying, you could expand into so many other directions. It not only applies to education, it applies to nutrition, it applies to health care.
Yeah.
It's diffusing itself into everything.
So I see it as it's all tied into that, and I don't, you know, I don't tell people very much, but I had a lot of challenges when I was in public school. You know, I'm a product of public school. I'm a success as much as I am a failure of public school. And so I have a perspective that I know, being the student that was having all kinds of challenges in school and now being an advocate for those kinds of students, I mean, I see both ends of the deal. And I'm telling you that the situation is dire, and there's got to be something that we can do. We've got to mobilize. We've got to, like I said, and it's got to pull in all parts of us. I mean, look at who we're fighting. We're fighting against the federal government, who is supporting corporations. You know, and I mentioned that to Leonard last week. You know, I mean, corporations are now considered entities, you know, thanks to the Citizens United decision. Well, I mean, it seems that every benefit has been afforded to these elite people that are making all kinds of money, and being prosperous at the expense of us, the working class. And I think that we've got to stand up for it. Otherwise, you know what, in a generation, there won't be a working class.
That's sounding a lot like 1984. saying that for the Huber effect.
Yeah.
Well, the trouble is that the corporations have discovered that public education is a piggy bank for them to draw out of.
Yeah, exactly. So, so where do we go from this? I don't know. Maybe, Mark, I know that you do write for PerDaily.com. Maybe that might be something that you may want to consider as a piece, is saying, okay, well, look, let's call this Day One or D-Day or Ground Zero Day or X-Factor Day. I don't know, but let's consider a day where we can all push each other to say, hey, you know what, this is a day where we are all going to walk out. It's not just going to take teachers. It's not just going to take students. I'm talking it's going to take, you know, mailmen. Because they're all, you know, the Postal Service is in danger of filing for bankruptcy. It's going to take, you know, police. It's going to take firefighters. It's going to take, you know, mechanics, bus drivers, printers. It's going
to
take anyone.
And that's the trouble. We need to get not just a few activists. We need to get the teachers who are filled with ennui active and concerned about their own welfares and not waiting for the union to protect them, which are not, but to get them to get active to protect themselves, and that is not happening.
You're absolutely right, and the fact is that, you know, I'm probably going to be condemned for saying this, and I'm sure I'll get some emails on it from you-know-who, but when you go to these systems like LA subs, they virtually do nothing but dialogue. They're great for complaining, and they're great for identifying their woes, but
applauding the union leaders.
Yeah, they always talk the talk, but they never walk the walk. And David is right, and we have been flirting with suggestions in the direction that he's speaking of on PerDaily.com. We haven't mounted anything dramatic in that sense, but on the other hand, we're soliciting people who write for the types of organizations that would be advocating that kind of action. And PerDaily.com can't be just Lenny Eisenberg and Mark Hemphill. It's got to be a lot of other people contributing to it and telling us what we should know and what we don't know. So, you know, there's no singular effort here.
No, you need the trickle-down effect.
Well, for the most part, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, in light of that, look, you're still an active member of SAVE. And
yes, I am.
And SAVE, it remains active, although it doesn't get the sort of, let's say, promotion or exposure that it really needs, and maybe we can do something about it. At least we're doing it right now.
Yeah.
And we'll be willing to follow up on it.
Well, there's some other Yahoo groups that have X'd us out.
Because
they don't like what we say.
Yeah, we know who they are. We're very familiar. And actually, we don't like what they say either. So it's pretty much even Steven on that. But tell us about SAVE. Well, what does it stand for? What does it do?
Okay. It started out as Substitute Alternative Voice for Education, but we're trying to figure out how to keep the acronym and make it larger than just substitutes, because we're about saving public education. And we started out as a group that was originally to fight the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, that Duffy signed with Cortinas to steal away the substitute's seniority. And then we just stayed together, and we've been meeting every week, every Saturday, at a Denny's in Hollywood. And we just started thinking more and more upon different lines that we need to do to protect public education, and we decided to run as a slate against the union leadership that were just deciding to switch jobs and stay in power. And we saw how they were just destroying the union, and I'm not sure it is not already destroyed.
Well, you know, to answer that, Linda and Mark, you know, the thing is that
people are demoralized. And I was very happy when I was running alongside David, because our philosophies are pretty similar.
Linda
I didn't figure I was going to win. because we only had $1,000 to spend in the first place. It was put up by Neil Shirkoff, who was our supporter. I have no money to run with, but we needed to show what was happening within the union and how it was being destroyed. And we wanted to just show that. And then we had, when I ran, Leonard Siegel, who is the director of the subs, although he's now not in that position anymore, he kept telling me, Linda, don't run, Warren Fletcher's going to run. And I thought, well, why shouldn't I run too? And then I discovered that he was creating a fake slate and manipulated the statements that go into the United Teachers at UT, the newspaper for the union. And I just got so upset that in one of our forums that we spoke out at, I exposed that, and I also exposed it in one of the area meetings. But I guess I should have spoken out more, but it promoted Warren Fletcher and David Lyle and other members. And these people were running as candidates, but they weren't really running. They were just putting in their statements, they were putting the slate, a fake slate. So these kids got fake, got free publicity for their candidacy. And we complained about it to the leaders of the citywide elections, but nothing was ever done.
And these were all election code violations.
Yeah.
And Warren Fletcher was on the election committee, and he was on the election committee in the prior election.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that if you don't take the election seriously, if you don't take the leadership seriously, no one's ever going to take you seriously. And, I mean, you know, I remember when Linda mentioned that, and she was upset, and she had every reason to be. But, I mean, by Leonard Siegel at worst, by him doing that, well, really what he did, because I don't think that he, you know, siphoned votes away from other people to Warren's camp. All he did was he ridiculed the process, and he trivialized it. He made it seem like a joke, and really it is a joke, because that should have caused something, you know, to cause some kind of consequences, and it didn't. The 2011 election committee just wanted to move on. They didn't want to investigate it further. There was all kinds of little infractions going on, and they're like, no, that's okay. You didn't send a complaint to the official person. And then, you know, I think Ginger Fox also, who I had spoke with, who is an advocate for the arts.
One of my running mates, Francisco Martinez, wrote
That's
15
right.
different areas in which there were violations.
And all of them were disregarded.
And we published it in PerDaily.com as part of one of the pieces that I wrote, the full body of it.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
but
it was ignored.
But the election committee only did it as Francisco going against Greg Sokovich, who was running against, and they ignored everything else.
Yeah.
They totally ignored everything else.
Along with that, I remember publishing David's letter, too.
Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
you see, and that's the problem. They made it seem like Francisco was trying to fight against Greg Sokovich. I mean, but really, that's kind of, if you will, an example of really the establishment against, you know, someone, because I know Francisco, and he's a great guy. He really cares about the students. That's an example of the establishment not wanting to give up or rescind any of its power. It wants to remain in power, you know. And so as much as I like Francisco, you know, that's really a story of David and Goliath, and, you know, Goliath stepping on David. As opposed to how it, you know, traditionally would end. The only way we can counter that, like I said, is if we all mobilize together with the community, with community members, church members. I'm not sure where else we could do, but we've got to stand up against, you know, against it. And it's a bigger picture than just teachers, students against the district.
I think we would all agree with that. It might reassure you, Linda, to know that Neil Chertkov has agreed to speak on the station, so it's just a matter of getting him scheduled when he's available to do it. And
well, that'd be great, because a lot of people are trying to shut him up.
Well, yeah, he's sort of like among substitute circles, the living Socrates, you know, the gadfly. and what can I say? The guy doesn't pull any punches. If they go after him, he goes after them. And
so. And he enjoys it. He enjoys the conflict.
No, oh yeah, for certain. And he won't give up on anything. But you know, your ideas are good. And yeah, good luck with the name too. Why don't you call yourselves Save All Valuable Teachers or Save All Valued Teachers or something like that.
Oh, that sounds good.
No, better yet, Save All Valued Educators.
Yeah. I would say change your name to Fight.
Yeah, we've got to be careful about the evaluation significance there.
Yeah, well, that's like I say, it's just Save All Valued, not Evaluated Educators.
All Evaluated Teachers.
Yeah, that would go over real big, yeah, I'm sure.
That would play right into the district.
Yeah, in so many ways. But,
I'm on my cell phone and is about ready to power off because the battery's going dead, but I've really enjoyed speaking to you two gentlemen.
And we sure enjoyed having you on.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
So long.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Now you're right. This back up.
That's
a
phone.
Yeah. And so say goodbye.
That's right. All right. Oh, probably run a little music, too. Why don't we do that? Oh, got a call.
See, getting another call. We got to go, though.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Take it.
Oh, radio.
Yeah, it's Lenny Eisenberg.
Lenny, we're about to go off, but, you know, we'll welcome you as of next week.
Sounds good. I'm sorry I just got hung up doing stuff.
No, but I wanted to assure you that I did bring up your issue with the African History Museum, so that's well known now.
Yeah, and you also, you know, one of the things that people, you know, you guys have to stop just bring up the idea that there has to be a fundraiser and you have to hire an attorney and you have to sue them. You have to go into court and get an injunction.
Lenny, I'm going to have you bring that up next week.
Okay.
All right.
Otherwise, they don't pay a price for stonewalling it, ignoring it.
Well, you know, and you're absolutely right, and I would like you to articulate that for us.
Sure enough.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Lenny.
Okay, that's it for Teacher Talk this week. We'll be back on the air next Sunday at noon. Come back to killradio.org.